Environment, Economic Development, and Agriculture Division for Wednesday, April 2nd, 2014 will come to order.
Order.
Senator Wieger, you're going to get to go first here if you're ready. Are you here? Okay. Senator Brown isn't around right now, so we'll wait for Senator Brown to come in.
Could please join me.
Welcome, Senator Wieger. Senate File 2407, you're becoming a regular here. You know, you maybe want to join this committee eventually.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate File 2407 appropriates $240,000 for a trail and a floating dock, and it would be with the Oakdale Nature Preserve. This would connect two very heavily traveled regional trails, the Gateway Trail, the Vento Trail, but also would link with the nearby school. The city of Oakdale has put together a plan to do this, and I have two witnesses. If I could, Mr. Chair, call on City Council Member Stan Karwoski to provide additional background on the need and the partnership on this, and then we have a staff person from the city to provide additional technical information as needed.
Is that a good Polish name? That sounds like a good Polish name.
Yeah, Stan Karwoski, East Sider, originally, and then been living in Oakdale for 27 years and on the council for 12 years in Oakdale.
Okay, go ahead with your testimony.
I started through the Park and Recreation Department, so that's kind of where I've got my passion. But it's about a 225-acre park, and we're within Stan Karwoski, City of Oakdale, City Council.
You already said it, didn't you? I thought I heard you say it. When we were doing the Polish part.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now this park's 225 acres. In recent 5 or 6 years, we've invested probably $2 million to $2.5 million of our own city dollars in improving the park. The trend line of visitors to the park is up. Like Chuck mentioned, this trail link would complete better loops. It would integrate the school to be able to come to our Discovery Center for educational programs. The park and this particular area of the trail would be within a mile of about six different communities: Maplewood, North St. Paul, White Bear Lake, Matamidi, and Lake Elmo. It's just something that we could really use the funding to jumpstart, continue on our improvements in the park.
What's a floating trail?
Floating
boardwalk.
It'll be a permanent bridge. There'll be some infrastructure to have it tied to the lake bottom, but the deck of the bridge will be first of all, it'll be ADA wheelchair accessible. And it will float on the water. We're looking for that. We've got several parks throughout the Oakdale. We're kind of looking for that kind of aspect to integrating with the nature. It's fairly common to have a floating bridge in a kind of a wilderness park.
We're handing out a picture showing the float. Mr. Chair, a very good picture showing the floating boardwalk is being distributed right now.
Okay. All right. Who's your other witness? Senator Wieger, Mr. Shops.
Mr. Chair, my name is David Shops. I'm the Assistant City Administrator for the City of Oakdale, and what's being handed out is just some of the information from the vendor on what potentially this floating bridge would look like. And so it will have handrails on both sides. It's 10 feet wide, will be ADA compliant, and then it'll be of the aluminum type material, so it's very permanent. We'll be there 365 days a year.
So even though it's floating, it's not going to float away, so we don't have to worry about bond proceeds going to something that's non-permanent?
That is correct. It's going to be there 365 days a year, and we'll be resting on the lake bottom. And with the engineering, we'll be moving forward on the most appropriate way to make sure it stays in place the entire time.
Okay. All right. Are there any questions or comments of the witnesses? Do you have anything further to add here, Senator Wieger?
No, Mr. Chair, members, this is frequently used, this area, and I might say your very talented staff person to your left is very familiar with this area as well. She offered that just as a testimony as to how many people are involved in trails. The number one issue that people support are parks and trails in our area. And so the return on investment, the appreciation, not only in my area, but throughout the state is well noted.
She mentioned that she was walking these trails before walking was even popular.
Okay.
Well, maybe not. That was the wrong thing to say there. Okay. Anyway, okay. So does the $239,000 get you to the finish line, or is it?
Mr. Chair, that's actually that's a majority of it, but the city will be putting its own funds in to cover additional costs for it through its park CIP fund. So, yes, the city will be funding a portion of it as well.
Okay. All right. Any other comments or questions from anybody? Okay. Seeing none, then we will, Senator Weaver, we'll lay this over with and make a recommendation to the bonding committee for you, okay?
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is Senator Brown here yet? How about Senator Bach? Are you here yet?
I'm here.
So that puts us down to Senator Saxock. Senator Saxock.
Through Mr. Chair, Senate File 2098. Today, we're presenting this, and it's Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council recommendations. I do have an author's amendment to get the bill in shape that we needed to have. It's the A1 amendment.
Yeah, this is Senator Saxog's first committee, so this is an author's amendment. We have a quorum, so.
Mr. Chair, can I just put.
Yes, Mr. Knopf.
Chair and Senator Saxog and Ms. Koop, I think there was a discussion, and that's not in this amendment, on line 20, let's see, it would be line 23.19. Were the availability of the appropriation until June 30, 2016? Wasn't there an email from the LCC about changing that to 2015? Not in this amendment.
Could you repeat that number, please?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Koop, it's
yes.
Line 23.19. And that, in our discussions, we didn't include that in the amendment, and I thought of that between doing the amendment and coming to the room. I'm wondering if they wanted to add that to the amendment, to the author's amendment at this point in time.
Mr. Chair, I'm Heather Koop, Assistant Director at the Lessard-Sands Outdoor Heritage Council, and Mr. Knopf, yes, that is correct.
And so, Mr. Chair, then, you would add to this A1 amendment on page 23, line 19, delete 2016 and insert 2015.
Okay, so Senator Saxog will incorporate that into the A1 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And so Senator Saxog moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed. Motion adopted. Thank you. Senator Saxog, go ahead.
And Mr. Chair and members, this deals with changing the numbers in a small way on some appropriations, but actually the largest addition, and all these, by the way, all these have been approved by the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. But the largest one is the Albert Lee Lake Management and Invasive Species Control Structure Supplement. And maybe I'll ask Ms. Koop to explain that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the amendment for the Albert Lake Watershed District addition of $700,000 is to finish out the construction of a barrier that was approved in Minnesota Laws 2013.
But as I say, Mr. Chair, members, this has been added to the recommendations of the council.
Okay. All right. Let's go through the bill then.
And again, Mr. Chair, I'm going to pass this on to Ms. Koop to go over the
Ms. Coop.
The recommendations.
Just say your name for the record, Ms. Coop, and then you can go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Heather Coop. I'm the Assistant Director at the Lasard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council. I would like to draw your attention, first of all, to the fiscal year 2015 Outdoor Heritage Fund Recommendations Bill Summary. I'll provide a brief overview of the appropriation recommendations and then a quick walkthrough of the bill. With the author's amendment, there are now 43 proposals for funding recommendations totaling a little over $109 million. The majority of that activity, over 63%, is an enhancement and restoration, which will occur throughout the state of Minnesota. The majority of funding, however, is in acquisition, and of this amount, approximately 66% is for fee acquisition and 33% is for easement acquisition. I might point out, too, that of that amount of little over almost $72 million, the five-year average for work in this area is approximately $61 million, so we are well in with keeping with past practices. For those acres that are acquired that have PILT obligations, we will incur approximately $240,000 in annual PILT payments. This appropriation also considers the ongoing costs associated with easements, and to that extent, we have dedicated approximately $1 million for ongoing monitoring and enforcement of conservation easements. In this year's bill, too, we have also put forward a recommendation for an aggressive aquatic invasive species pilot program and have dedicated a little over $4 million to that effort. I want to point your attention to the outcomes associated with this bill. I think sometimes we get caught up in the acres that are being restored, protected, and enhanced. And while that is very important, I think it's the ongoing long-term outcomes that are essentially at the heart of these recommendations. Those outcomes include improved aquatic indicators, remnant prairies and wetlands will be perpetually protected. We will have protected, restored, and enhanced habitat for migratory waterfowl, upland birds, and species of greatest conservation need. Forest lands will be protected from development and fragmentation. Wetland and upland complexes will consist of native prairies, restored prairies, quality grasslands, and restored shallow lakes and wetlands. And core areas with highly biologically diverse wetland and plant communities, including native prairie, big woods, and oak savanna, will be protected and restored. The Council has made concerted effort to invest heavily in the prairie regions of the state, and as such, you will see as we walk through the bill a number of appropriations that are in alignment with the Minnesota Prairie Conservation Plan. To that extent, 58% of the activity and 54% of the funding will be dedicated to that effort. Of those prairies being protected and restored and enhanced, approximately 2,000 acres of native prairie will be permanently protected, and almost 7,000 acres will be restored and enhanced in native prairie communities. Forests in the northern and southeastern regions of the state will also receive attention, approximately 42% of the activity and 29% of the recommended funds dedicated to that effort. Importantly in this year's bill is the amount of money that's dedicated to work in the metropolitan urbanizing region, and almost 20% of the recommendations are dedicated to those efforts. There are a number of new appropriations you will see in this year's bill to counties located in the 7-county metropolitan area who will be doing work in restoration and enhancement, as well as a new Conservation Partners Legacy Grant program of almost over $4 million dedicated to smaller projects located in metropolitan areas and communities of greater than 50,000 people. As I indicated a moment ago, there are a number of new entities receiving or recommending to receive appropriations, and of those, we include 3 park units, 3 watershed districts, 1 conservation district, 4 counties, 1 tribal government, 2 state agencies, and 13 NGOs. Importantly, though, in addition to the new appropriation recommendations, are the ongoing commitments and investments in programs that have shown to have great success, and approximately 73% of those recommendations are to those ongoing programs. And you'll see those reflected in the appropriation riders as phase 1 through 6. Finally, I'd like to point out, too, that these programs are only successful to the extent that they're able to collaborate and partner with other entities, and 25% of those programs are doing so in collaboration with others. Additionally, as part of that cooperation and partnership, what we see manifest is a great deal of leverage being brought to bear on the projects, and 11 programs are bringing approximately $35 million of additional money to do conservation work in the state of Minnesota. With that, Mr. Chair, I would like to quickly walk through the bill. The bill is divided into six sections, and the total amount with the author's amendment is a little over $109 million. So these numbers will be a little bit different in the bill that you have before you. The first section remains the same, that is the prairies. There's over almost $37.5 million dedicated to prairie work in the state. As I mentioned in my introductory comments, there are a number of programs that are new in this section, and all of them are in alignment with the Prairie Conservation Plan. I want to direct your attention to a couple of pieces of language that are new in these appropriations. One is a preference given to native prairie acquisition whenever possible. And the second is that haying and grazing cannot be conducted without an existing management plan under conditions of emergency orders by the government.
Senator Westrom. Mr. Chair, grazing, why would we not allow grazing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, grazing and haying is allowed as a conservation technique on many of the lands that have been acquired with Outdoor Heritage Fund. That activity is taking place as part of a conservation activity. What this language says is that under emergency orders, if a haying and grazing plan is not in effect, that activity could not ensue.
That's my point. How often is an emergency order in that they allow grazing and haying?
For the last several summers, Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, for the last several summers, I believe an emergency haying and grazing orders have been enacted.
And so, Mr. Chair, you're saying outside of that, we don't want to allow any grazing of animals on such property?
Mr. Chair,
there's a difference between haying and there's a difference between haying and grazing. I assume you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, my understanding from the conservation scientists is that conservation grazing and haying is done as a management tool. Makes sense, and there are very strict rules or protocols around when and where those activities take place. I think the concern, if I may, on the part of the council is if there is not a haying and grazing plan in place, that those protocols might interfere with the habitat values associated with those lands.
Mr. Chair, you keep blending grazing and haying together as if it's one activity. The difference... So you understand, at least how I understand haying, and if you've got a different definition, please let us know. Haying would be bringing equipment in, cutting it down with farm equipment and letting it dry and then baling it or gathering it in some other fashion. Grazing would be bringing animals in and or allowing cattle, for example, to be grazing the same habitat as other natural wildlife are using, but it would keep the grass managed, if you will. So the way you're blending them together gives me concern that you either don't understand the difference or by saying them together is, I think there's a difference. And maybe, do they see it that way or not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, we don't see haying and grazing as the same thing. We look at them as two different ways of managing a particular piece of property, but they are special ways of doing it, mm-hmm. and you got to have special permits. What I think the council is constantly thinking about is that we don't want to pay millions of dollars and thousands of dollars for easements and then have, if it isn't part of the management plan, to have cows grazing on them.
And Senator Saxog, Mr. Chair, these management plans, and maybe to the witness, when would they enter into them? At the time of purchasing the easement and allow it, or It might beg the question, do we need to have that negotiation or discussion going up on better in the front end, and maybe there's more multi-purpose use of the land?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrum, yes, indeed, there are management plans developed. For example, under the RIM WRP program, there are individual management plans that are developed between the Board of Water and Soil Resources, NRCS, and the landowner. They're very specific to the lands that are being eased. For state lands that are in the wildlife management area system, my understanding is that the area wildlife managers work with their cohorts to develop specific management plans for those WMAs. So those are in place at the time the lands are conveyed to, or shortly thereafter, at the time that the lands are conveyed to the state.
Last point, Mr. Chair. I think talking about haying and grazing as if it's one same activity should be looked at. Seems to be grazing tends to be a more a gentle way to use those types of lands than haying. Not that I would be opposed to either, but I just the way you group it into one, it should be looked at separately if one activity may be.
Do you graze before you hay, or do you hay before you graze?
Depends upon the land, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Anyway, go ahead. That's cool.
I want to draw your attention to a couple of new appropriations within the prairie section. Under 2E, the acceleration of protection of grassland and prairie habitat with the RIM and Native Prairie Bank easement program. This is an effort, again, to really accelerate the acquisition of Native Prairie within the state of Minnesota, and that's a collaboration between the Board of Water and Soil Resources and the Department of Natural Resources. Additionally, in this section, there are two new restoration enhancement programs located within the seven-county metropolitan area, the Crowhassan Prairie Complex Restoration Enhancement under 2J, and under 2K, the Prairie and Oak Savanna Restoration along the Mississippi and Rum Rivers located in Anoka County. The third subdivision is for forests, and that's $16.1 million in recommendation. There are a couple of new recommendations in this part of the bill as well. The first is 3A, preventing forest fragmentation and protecting and restoring lake and stream habitat in the St. Louis River. This is $2.8 million to the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa to acquire land to be held in trust by the United States Department of the Interior for habitat purposes. The other new appropriation recommendation under this section is protecting pineland sands aquifer forest lands. This is an effort to look at land conversion, forest conversion in the northwestern prairie transition part of the state to acquire land in fee for inclusion in the outdoor recreation units applicable. And finally, under a new appropriation under this section is a floodplain forest enhancement on the Mississippi River. This is an appropriation recommendation to the Audubon Society to enhance floodplain forests in the Mississippi River. The other appropriation recommendations under both the prairie and the forest sections are ongoing continuation of programs that have previously received recommendations and have deemed to be successful by the council. The fourth subdivision is for wetlands, and this there's a couple of authors' amendments that are pertinent here, changing under 4A as a result of the changes in the United States Farm Bill recently passed from the RIM Reinvest in Minnesota Wetlands Reserve Program to the Reinvest in Minnesota Wetlands Program Partnership. The program stays fundamentally the same, able to leverage federal money to work in the prairie pothole and prairie regions of the state. That dollar amount is a little over $24 million. The fifth subdivision is under habitats. That in the bill before you is at $30.19 million, with a $700,000 addition. That obviously goes up to $30.89 million. There are a couple of new recommendations you'll see under this section of the bill. The first is under 5E, the Mistinka River Fish and Wildlife Habitat Corridor Rehabilitation Program. This is an effort to help the Bordesoux Watershed to restore natural systems located within that district. There's also another appropriation to Metropolitan County, to Washington County under 5I, to restore and enhance Washington County public lands, as well as under 5J, Worth Park enhancements, an appropriation recommendation to the Minneapolis Park Board to restore habitat within Worth Park itself. Finally, under this subdivision, two, 5K is the evaluate effectiveness of aquatic invasive species prevention strategies. This is a pilot program to be administered by the Central Minnesota Initiative Fund. It's a collaboration pilot project to hope to find strategies and tactics that will be effective in halting the spread of aquatic invasive species in the state. Finally, as I mentioned earlier, a new Conservation Partners Legacy Grant Program under 5M, which is dedicated to funding habitat projects within metropolitan areas and cities greater than 50,000 individuals. The last subdivision is administration. That is $885,000. Those appropriation recommendations take care of contract management, administrative costs associated with the council, a technical evaluation panel, and the ability to do upfront work in appraising lands that have particularly high dollar value. And finally, helping to fund the council's or the Outdoor Heritage Fund's share of the legacy website. The remainder of the bill, Mr. Chair, talks about the availability of the appropriation, and the payment conditions, as well as a mapping requirement so that folks in our state have easy access to the lands that have been acquired, restored, and enhanced for their benefit. With that, I will stand for questions.
And, Mr. Chair, before we answer questions, I would like to introduce David Hartwell, chairman of the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, who has a few words for us, and of course, he'll be available for questions also.
Mr. Hartwell.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for hearing our recommendations. I'm actually quite excited by the
I know we said your name already, but say your name anyway.
I'm sorry. I'm David Hartwell, okay. Chair of the Lasard Sam's Council. I'm actually quite excited by the blend of projects that we bring to you. From north to south, east to west, forest to prairies. It's a well-thought-out package throughout the state and looking at various habitats and the challenges there are. And I'm really here to answer your questions more than anything else.
All right. Any questions from the committee? Senator Ingebretson, you look like you have something to say.
Do I look like I have something to say?
Yes, you do.
Well, I'm so impressed that the chairman knows that we have these bills in committee and they're supposed to be here today versus the one we had this morning. We had some fun this morning, but there was a bill there that we didn't have to actually talk about.
This one's in the right committee.
Yeah, this is in the right committee, I think. Well, it's always good to be part of the process of moving this bill through. I've been with the Lasard Sam's since the beginning of time, and it's been a true privilege it's been absolutely wonderful to work with the people that really know what's going on in this in our great state, and some of the things that really stick out to me are we move forward without any geographical direction, if you will. The best projects, generally the best projects, at least the group of 12 talk about and come to at the end of the day. Then, quite frankly, we look to see where they go, where the money's been going, and that's always the way we've approached things. And I think that's very good. It's setting priorities where I think the Constitution has said that we should be doing. And so it's been fun to be part of that process, Mr. Chair. I have to ask: has the A1 amendment been adopted already?
A1 amendment has been
okay.
Adopted.
Sorry. Right. Right. Yeah. I do have amendments if you'd like
okay.
to move forward.
Sure. Which one?
Okay. I'd like to move with the, first of all, with the A2 amendment.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
That's not the A2 amendment, please. Thank you. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. If I could take a little time to explain the amendment here. The A2 amendment addresses the acquisition of property that's, if you direct your attention to the page 8, line 23, basically the acquisition of property that's going to be now turned over to the Fond du Lac reservation and actually put into reservation properties as I think Ms. Koop described, the Department of Interior will be overseeing it, and also the authority will be guided by the Native Americans in that particular authority, in that particular area. What my amendment does, and please understand, we have many discussions going on, I know, and as Senator Saxog knows, about different appropriations, and we're always mindful of the Constitution. I think the Constitution is very clear. It is much more clear than other referendums that have come forward in the state of Minnesota, and I think probably the amount of work that went into the overall constitutional language on this particular 3/8% was very clear and quite concise. And yes, we do get into some I wouldn't call it rancorings, but we do get into some disagreements as to where those dollars are spent, whether it be priority wise. Again, prioritizing. I mean, I know we started out with, I don't remember how many billion dollars worth of requests with only $67 million to start with, and we're continuously seeing that. But so a lot of discussion has gone on as to where these dollars go, and this particular appropriation in the bill as it stands before you basically purchases land. The state of Minnesota will purchase land, and it will go into the Fond du Lac reservation, where it is. It is a good project. I want to make everybody very clear that it is a good project. It's a great fit for the work that we've been doing. But where I have problem with is that the authority takes over the hunting and fishing regulations and does not give the commissioner total authority. And to cut to the chase, we'll go right to the gray wolf. That was the discussion on this acquisition, that nobody would be allowed to hunt gray wolf on this property. Now, in talking with the stakeholders, there have been very, very good conversations over the last days. We've talked about it being a very minuscule part of the state of Minnesota, if you will, where the Minnesota hunters and trappers will not be able to participate in the take of the gray wolf. And at any given time, the way I understand it, the way the federal law applies is that, these properties could actually the rules could actually be changed where we wouldn't be able to take any animals. Now, I might be incorrect in saying that. Maybe Mr. Knopf can help me out with that. But this is a shift of money that goes from that appropriation totally to the appropriation which deals with the REM WRP. Most generally, I mean, I think it's known by everybody in the room that either the money falls to the bottom line or we appropriate it in a different fashion, and it's just my prerogative to put it towards that. And maybe, Greg, you could help us with a little more of an explanation if I missed something or if I misspoke. But I think I gave it a pretty good description. I can say, and I think it's open, well, it's public, there was some disagreement amongst the members. Not too often we get into those disagreements, but this one's one of them. And I think the majority rules, and that's what we're all about here, but it was an 8-4 vote. I was one of the four that voted against this moving forward. I also got into some discussions with a member of the, or at least a representative from that area, that we talk about sales tax and how sales tax is paid in the state of Minnesota versus occasionally on the reservation. And I understand that the law, the interior law, the federal law dictates that they can do as they please. They can collect the full 3/8% and give it to the state of Minnesota. But I believe in this case, they also can make the decision to refund each member. And that's the decision they've made. I'm not here to agree or disagree with that, but I think that probably is where we get into this constitutional issue and setting a precedent. Now, maybe we've done other projects. I think we have done other projects. Maybe you can comment to that, Ms. Koop, moving forward here. But that's basically the trucks of my amendment, is to shift those dollars to the REM project, and that's basically it. And I certainly will stand for questions.
Okay. Senator Sachs, I have comments.
Senator, Chairman, Senator Engelbretson, first of all, as you say, we dealt with this as a council and approved it, and we had all the issues that and more information in front of us than this committee does, and of course that's why we asked the council to make the recommendations, because they have the information and the resources in back of them, and specifically about the agreement with the band, I'm going to ask Ms. Koop and Mr. Hartwell to speak about that recommendation, that agreement.
Mr. Hartwell.
Yes. Mr. Chair and members, the information that we gathered while looking at this project, it was important for us to understand what happens if this particular entity or any entity that's getting money that we recommend doesn't live with the requirements as per the agreements that are put in place. This was our first project that involved ownership by a tribal entity. But we've done quite a few projects that are covered by treaty rights. So the hunting issue has been something that has been addressed before, but not the actual ownership. We have information from the Department of Interior and the tribe indicating that if the grant agreement that would be made with the tribe, between the tribe and the state, were not lived up to, that they would have that dispute in Minnesota court, not in tribal court, not in federal court, and that the Department of Interior would acknowledge the state's rights in that regard, up to a reversionary right back to the state. So we were comfortable that the rights that were being negotiated with the tribe, as is done with any other organization when we get into a grant agreement, were enforceable. So from our perspective, I think the worry about they're going to change the rules and not allow hunting anywhere wasn't real, because that's going to be part of the agreement and part of the constitutional requirement that they have to fulfill in terms of when this grant is made. I want to first say that this is a project that really has incredible value. It is, if you think about cupping your hands and looking at the bowl that it creates, this is a project with a lake in the center and almost all of the upland around it that would be protected, which was why it was attractive to the council in the first place. This is an ecosystem that's very unique and unusual to be able to protect to this extent in one fell swoop. The issue of sales tax, I don't have any specific comment other than to say, we recommend projects with non-governmental organizations that have no sales tax issue or don't pay sales tax because they're nonprofits. This is no different than that. This is a project that will benefit all of Minnesota. The grant agreement will require access for all Minnesotans to the property. So we think it's a great project. We think that the appropriate holder of the land is the tribe. They have a very robust natural resource management unit, and they're capable of doing it, and they're willing to live with the agreements and contracts. that would be incumbent on anyone else in the same situation.
Ms. Koop, did you want to comment on sales tax?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I just want to clarify, too, that the Fond du Lac Band does have a negotiated agreement with the Department of Revenue to collect sales tax by tribal members. So they are paying sales tax at this time. I want to add, too, that there is precedence for lands being acquired by the state of Minnesota and transferred through a band to the federal government. In the 90s, a parcel of land was purchased for inclusion in the Grand Portage State Park. That land did have a reversionary clause similar to the one required under the Outdoor Heritage Fund. The land was conveyed and held in trust by the federal government, and so there is precedence for engaging in that transaction.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my question would be, is those acquisitions, do they pertain to hunting and fishing?
Ms. Koop.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I don't know if I can certainly
were they,
find
were
out.
They park, I guess were they park purchases? I thought that's what I heard generally.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, yes, it was.
So probably they didn't. I don't know that. I don't want to put the word probable out. I think that's unfair, but I appreciate that. But with regards to the sales tax, do you know whether there is a refund to members?
Ms. Koop, do you know?
And I don't want to belabor this, by the way.
I'm sorry. Could you repeat your question, please?
You said that they do participate in the sales tax. Do you know if there is a rebate? There's a refund to the members that comes back from the state of Minnesota on those sales tax?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I would call upon the Fond du Lac Band Council, Reed LeBeau, to answer that specific question, if I may.
Mr. Chairman, Reed LeBeau with the Jacobson Law Group representing the Fond du Lac Band. Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, the Fond du Lac Band has a sales tax agreement with the state of Minnesota, and I couldn't tell you off the top of my head what the ins and outs of every part of that sales tax agreement is to what comes back and the dollar amounts that go out. What I can tell you generally is that how it works is the band collects sales tax. They collect the state's regular sales tax amount, and that's remitted to the state. And then there's a formula that kicks in the event that there is a rebate. What I think you're missing in your conversation about sales tax is probably the lion's share of the sales tax that is paid by band members when they're outside the reservation. So they drive into Duluth or they drive into the cities, they're paying the sales tax just like everybody else. And as we've had a conversation about, there's nothing in the Constitution that provides any exemption from paying that sales tax. The sales tax in question was overwhelmingly approved by the band when it was brought up to a vote. This is the second time that we've been through this process, as you well know. We went down this road a year ago. The council decided at that point not to approve the project. An RFP went out again, invited us to submit a proposal. We resubmitted, and we appreciate the council's recommendation this time. There was nothing in the RFP that got into the issue of a tribe isn't eligible to apply. So that's why we're here.
No, I have some questions of him.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. And to the testifier, there's an agreement upon with the state of Minnesota with the band on the sales tax, correct?
Mr. Chairman, correct.
You don't know what percentage that is that actually comes back per member. And that member has to be a member. You and I talked about that. I mean, they just can't be descendant members. They have to be members, whatever the difference that is. But maybe that's not the right word either, but... But can that agreement be changed? I mean, this is the area that I'm getting into here now that I think people aren't very informed on. So maybe you can tell them. Can those agreements be changed with regards to the sales tax?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, you know, honestly, I couldn't give you the ins and outs of how the sales tax agreements between the Department of Revenue and the Fond du Lac Band occur. I know that they are reauthorized at various points in time, but I couldn't testify as to how exactly they work. I'd be happy to follow up with you if you want.
That would be great if you would. Mr. Chair, just understand, we've had good conversations. He's been by my office, and we've talked about this at length, and he knows what my concerns are, and I carry the concerns of a lot of people, that otherwise I wouldn't be bringing an amendment forward. So thank you. That'd be great to know whether those agreements can actually be changed at any given time or if there's a sunset on such a thing. I mean, I don't think we know that. So,
Senator Dewey.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank Senator Ingebrigtsen for bringing an amendment to this bill. Probably still considering my position on it, but I think it's good to have a discussion about the contents of the bill, because up to this point I thought we just served as a rubber stamp for these proposals, and I think that's what Dennis Anderson has directed us, and the governor has directed us, and the council itself has directed us as a legislature, that we weren't able to really affect or amend these proposals. So glad we're having a good and open discussion about possibly making a change.
Well, and truth be told, these are recommendations, and we have the final say-so on it. So,
not what I've been given to understand.
Well, I know. You're
immediately
you're
prior years.
Correct on that. Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in that line of thinking, we haven't really changed the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and I know that their recommendations, and I know that I'm honored to serve on the Clean Water Council, and I get questions all the time. Can't we just change what the Clean Water Council is doing? And I say, well, you can come before the Clean Water Council and you can talk to them about it, because I think what we have here is a great opportunity to allow citizens to come before these particular councils and give their input. And I have given my input to the Outdoor Heritage Council in the past, not to the whole council, but to members. And I think that, as Mr. Hartwell stated, they look at a lot of different things in their meetings, and they really do a thorough job, as does the Clean Water Council. I don't want to just start amending what their recommendations are. I think it's a slippery slope.
But and Mr. Chair, I don't want to get away from the amendment here, because we need to deal with it. But with what Senator Dibble and Senator Scalzi said, you know, they're well aware that they may not have changed something right within the recommendations, but the council indeed has changed, and we now are putting more money, for instance, into the metropolitan area on basically your input. So,
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, and just to be clear, I like the package. I think it's great, and I appreciate the work that the Outdoor Heritage Council Sam's Council has done.
Mr. Chairman, just one last point that I'd like to hit on. I can't directly address Senator Ingebrigtsen's concerns on the sales tax. Mm-hmm. That's not my area, but I can speak at length, but I won't, on the issue of the reversion of title. As staff for the council has pointed out, this is not breaking new ground. This is something that the state of Minnesota has done before. As we were going through the process, we worked very hard with the council and the Bureau of Indian Affairs, Department of Interior, which that's not an easy task, to make sure that once the package was put together and once the title was submitted to the department, that was something that the department would accept, and that they would say that that's acceptable for placing that into trust with that reversion of title on there. And all indications we received were, yep, that would be absolutely fine, because it followed the exact precedent that was set in the Grand Portage scenario. That's important because that's not something that, in my practice as an Indian law practitioner, that's done very often at all. It's not something that Indian tribes want to typically do, is put an automatic reversion of title to the person that's transferring the land over. It's what we've agreed to in this case because we believe very strongly in the project. We believe that this is a terrific partnership with the state of Minnesota. It's going to open up, as a secondary benefit to what we're proposing, 900 acres of currently private land to hunting, and we've agreed in the management plan to do it pursuant to Minnesota law, and the only thing that we've excluded is the wolf hunting issue, and that is completely consistent with other appropriations that Lessard Sam's Council has made in the area of the Arboretum from a year ago. So just wanted to put that on the record.
So Mr. Chair, is the final, I guess, statement is the agreement is violated, it reverts the state of Minnesota. I don't support this amendment, and I would hope everybody would vote in the negative.
Okay. Any further questions or comments? Okay. Seeing none, then, on the A2 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Senator Sacks-Hogg, if you'll indulge me for a minute here, we got a couple of authors that came in late, and I'm not sure if your bill's going to take a little bit longer or not, and there's some people from up north that we might want to get out of here. Do you mind if we suspend the hearing on this bill and continue from where we're at, and then let the other authors come up and hear their bills, and then we'll go on with this bill, and then we'll go on with the LCCMR bill. Is that okay?
That would be fine,
okay,
Mr. Chair.
Okay, so we'll suspend the hearing on this bill, and call Senator Brown to the table on Senate File 2557.
No, it's not.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And, Mr. Chair, I may owe you dinner for that one.
Normally we punish late people, but in this case, it's not you that needs this is good. Okay, Senator Brown, go ahead.
Thank you. Members, before us today, I have Senate File 2557. It's a bonding request for a grant to the cities of Clear Lake and Clearwater for their sewer authority to construct necessary improvements to their district. And, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your hearing this bill today. I do have a funding request fact sheet. I don't know if that's been handed out yet. And with that, I do have two gentlemen here today to testify on behalf of this request.
Okay, go ahead. Who wants to go first and just say your name for the record?
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you. My name is Pete Edmondson. I'm the mayor of Clearwater. This is my first term up for taking office in 2013. On the other side of Senator Brown is Mayor Tim Gunner from the city of Clear Lake. Both the city of Clearwater and the city of Clear Lake entered into a water and sewer authority agreement in the 1970s for the purpose of taking care of our water and sewer needs for the two cities. That all went along very fine up until the early 2000s. In the mid-2000s, our facility started to not meet the standards from the state regulations and upgrades needed to be made. It was during that time, the height of the housing boom, 2005, 6, and 7, where we actually had a moratorium set for the two cities until the problems were fixed. What happened was a $12 million facility upgrade was done, complete overhaul, and everything was ready to go at the end of 2007. So as you remember from 2008, that was the poor timing for us with the housing market and with the building that went on during that time. So from 2008 till the present, both cities, roughly the combined population of 2,500, have been paying this $12 million bill through our WAC and SAC, which are the water and sewer fees when people attempt to build and pull permits, and also our monthly water and sewer usage. And so what we're looking at with this project is some facility upgrades that will do a number of things, both environmentally and economically, but the main underlying factor is through the lowering and the efficiency, lowering the expenses and the efficiency of our plant. One of the other things that is going on, we have a neighboring city, the city of Foley. They are approximately 10 miles away from Clear Lake, and they are actually in their same situation that we found ourselves in over a decade ago. Their facilities are failing. They are looking to join up with our facility, and part of this project and future project funds will be used to get them and solve their problems as well. When we look at environmental positives, currently right now, the facility treats every day approximately 160,000 gallons. Those gallons are currently going into the Mississippi River. And what happens throughout the course of the years, between 60 million and upwards of 100 million gallons getting put into the Mississippi River, it goes to our treatment plant. Different chemicals have to be treated to be pulled from that, and then it is sent in the Mississippi on towards the Gulf of Mexico. So what we are looking to do with a part of this project is keep all of those gallons locally and regionally, which will have many benefits, obviously, to our aquifer, to our farmers, to our irrigation, and on top of lowering the expenses of treating it and so on and so forth. So the it's kind of an A-plus for what we're looking to do with our economic side and also on the environmental side as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Go ahead. Say your name for the record also and then just begin.
Mayor Tim Gunner from Clear Lake. Mr. Chair, I just want to add what Mr. Mayor Edmondson was talking to about hooking up with Foley. There is a chain of lakes on the route coming towards Clearwater and Clear Lake. We would like to pick them up also. And the City of Palmer Township and Dwellum Township, we would like to pick them up. They have a few developments on the way also. Especially with the chain of lakes. They all have mound systems and septic systems. We're in conjunction with the county of trying to work that to see if we can hook up with them also and clean up all that around the lakes also. So,
do either have you applied to, I see the application is from the Public Facilities Authority. Have you applied and do you know where you are on the list there? Mayor?
Mr. Chair? We do have an application in, I believe, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. So we are in the midst of getting the feasibility studies done and walking through what needs to be done. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Well, the PFA, it's kind of the Public Facilities Authority, is the group that that we send most of the water projects to decide where you are on a list and what kind of priority there is. And we never have enough money there, and because we have way too many projects. But I was just checking to see if you had already applied there or not.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we did apply. Our scoring system compared to – we're waiting for the results of that. So
okay.
From where we saw, looking at the entire project and the – I think our score was up in the 70s.
You have a pretty high per-month water bill for people, and will this help lower it, or how will this help?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, the 12, 13 years ago, as myself and others moved in the community, utility bills ranged approximately $50 for every 2 months. Mm-hmm. After that facility, again, with the combined population of 2,000 to 2,500, we're currently paying approximately $100 to $150 each month. And as you can imagine, with new business trying to bring in new developers for housing. Two ways that we're going to reduce these fees, and it's increasing our tax base with new users and also cutting our expenses. This project will definitely help with that.
Okay. Are there any questions or comments from the committee members? Senator Westrum.
Mr. Chair, I think we've got you geographically pinpointed, but you're the town right along the freeway, aren't you? Towards St. Cloud?
Yes, Senator Westrum. And if I had planned ahead, I would have brought donuts from the Clearwater Travel Plaza for everyone, but I didn't think of that ahead of time.
That would have pushed me over the edge.
I can bring them tomorrow.
Well, we can always suspend the hearing for a day. And
Mr. Chair, the city of Clear Lake has a population of 545 residents. Their main concern, I've done a door-to-door survey over the past year. Their main concern is water and sewer rates are very high. And some residents are moving out because of the utility rates are so high. We're trying everything we can. The city of Clear Lake has been in a deficit for approximately 6 years. We're slowly whittling that down. It's hard. I have a couple of businesses in town. It's very hard. It's. I can't say anything more. It's.
We understand.
Yep. Their main concern is the rates.
Okay.
So,
any final comments,
Mr. Chair, if I may, one of the as I see the uniqueness of this project is not only is it looking at just the city of Clearwater or the city of Clear Lake, potentially as we're looking for Foley and all of the townships that connect everybody there. Just this past week, MnDOT, who has a wayside rest just past the Clearwater exit on 94, they've now come to Clearwater looking to hook up to the system. And so that's kind of the uniqueness of this regional project is helping with economic development as we get these water and sewer rates lower. When we compare ourselves to the other cities around us, Monticello, Annandale, St. Cloud, half of the permit, they can be paid in those cities that they pay with us. And so definitely that's something that as a regional and the northern end of Wright County and the southern parts of Stearns and Sherburne County, it's a vast reaching project, not just specifically to two in, specific cities.
Okay. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, just to that point, if I understand right, you're working going to work together, or you are working together, and then is the city of Foley somebody coming in potentially in the future? And I ask, I've got two small communities, smaller than your communities, that jointly have went together some years ago with a sewer pond about 10, 12 years ago. It seems to be working, and it helped bring the cost, and the pond is in the, between the two towns. Am I understanding that right with what you're proposing?
Mr. Chair, yeah. Members, we have the support from the city of Foley with their council offering that they're looking forward to them one day hooking up with us. Like I mentioned earlier, in the 70s is when the city of Clearwater and city of Clear Lake formed a sewer authority that is currently very healthy and very active. We together are paying for this facility with a couple of employees. It's its own entity. What we'd be looking to do is continue to gather more of the users. The specific situation with Foley is, like I mentioned, they were exactly where we were only 12 years earlier. Their ponds are failing. They have to make a big decision. Are they going to put up their own facility and end up with higher weights such as we've had, or can they come down and join us as a single user? And that's what we're exploring, and this is part of the project. So they will be coming with some further requests.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor?
Mr. Chair, members, the city of Foley had gone to the city of St. Cloud, and they denied them. And so they were expanding the other way instead of going towards Foley. But they've denied them also. We have also tried back probably about 5 years ago for the city of Clearwater to go to St. Cloud and hook up. The city of Clear Lake would then take care of the debt and then go that route. The city of St. Cloud also denied the city of Clearwater also. So we're kind of stuck in a hard spot there.
Okay. All right. Well, Senator Brown, any final comments?
No, Mr. Chair and members, I just appreciate you hearing this request, and I hope that it can end up in the final bill.
Okay. Well, members, then we'll lay over Senate File 2557 for a recommendation to the bonding committee. So thank you very much, and I appreciate the
thank
testimony.
You.
Thank you.
Senator Bach? Senate File 2339, Senator Bach, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. You wouldn't think of a rural member like myself having a suburban community, but I actually have one that you honestly, I think, would call a suburban community. Just on the upper hillside of Duluth, once you get up, you're on Highway 53 up towards International Falls. When you get up over the hill, you enter what used to be the town of Herman, township of Herman, that was incorporated into a city in 1976. So it's a relatively new city by standards, one of the newer ones in the state. It's been a very fast growing area, as the city of Duluth is very, very landlocked against the lake and the hill. So a lot of housing over the last four decades have been built up above the hill in Hermantown. One of the things that's unique about these newer cities is sometimes the housing development happens faster than the other infrastructure that needs to happen to keep up with the housing development. So Hermantown and the surrounding townships up there are There's a lot of public amenities that they don't have that you find in more mature aged communities. And one of those is the idea of a YMCA-type wellness center. There is one downtown, right downtown in Duluth, but nothing above the hill that serves the southern part of St. Louis County. So the city started collaborating with the surrounding townships north of Duluth, and all of those townships in the city have passed resolutions to pursue the development of a wellness center. So the concept is they would the city of Hermantown would be the fiscal agent for this facility, and there is a piece of school property from the school district they've identified that it very likely would end up built on. We would propose to come with legislation should the project be successful after the planning and pre-design to create a governing board of the surrounding townships and of the city that actually would make the decisions around the operation and of the facility. We envision the YMCA being a partner in this. Likely, this governing board would contract with the YMCA to actually run the facility. So what the bill does, members, and I noticed when I read it today, it asks for $250,000 in bond proceeds for the planning and pre-design of a facility that we then would come later looking for bonding for. I believe, and I'd have to check with council, I think that's not a bondable expense of planning and pre-design. It may have to be cash, but not certain of that. But
we can do it.
It's bondable? Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, whether you have cash or bonding, our request is on behalf of the city of Hermantown and those surrounding townships for a very much needed facility for that region of the state that's very underserved. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I have the mayor and another representative to speak to the bill.
Do you have anything to add? No.
Go ahead. Any questions?
long as you're here. Go ahead.
No.
Just say your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark McShane. I'm a Friedenberg Township resident. Previously, I served as a township supervisor. Currently, I'm on the board of directors for the Duluth Area Family YMCA. This Airhead Health and Wellness Center is, as Senator Bach indicated, a regional response to the wellness needs because of the staggering statistics in St. Louis County. In your sheets, you'll find a statistic talking about St. Louis County ranking 72nd out of 87 Minnesota counties in health outcomes considering length of life and quality of life. Actually, that's inaccurate. A report came out this past week in the Duluth News Tribune. The heading reads, Northland's health rankings still unhealthy. St. Louis County is not 72nd, has gone to 75th. We're going backwards. We need to reverse that trend. That's the importance of this type of a facility. And we're proposing a comprehensive facility to address those health and wellness needs. We have a couple of other community leaders who would like to speak on this matter. And Hermantown Mayor Wayne Boucher is here to speak, and we have the CEO of the Duluth Area Association of YMCAs also to speak.
Thank you. Mayor, welcome to the committee.
Wayne Boucher, Mayor of Hermantown. The Hermantown community has experienced an increasing need for health and wellness and recreational opportunities.
Are you related to Henry?
No. No.
Okay, go ahead.
Very good question. But I do play hockey.
Okay, good.
But since we became a city 38 years ago, and recently, while looking for answers to our own problems, we discovered that our surrounding townships and cities, communities near us, had the same problems. This provided a unique opportunity for us to work together to solve something that we all have in common. Continued population growth outside Duluth has magnified the need for the solution to this problem in our small communities. There are roughly 86,000 people in our neighboring city. They have direct access to high-quality health, recreation, and wellness opportunities. These types of programs and facilities range from difficult or impossible to access for the roughly 30,000 people in the surrounding townships in southern St. Louis County. Solving this problem is our goal. The City of Hermantown has agreed to be the fiscal agent for the Arrowhead Regional Health and Wellness Center. If granted, our request for planning and pre-design funds will allow specific wellness issues of rural southern St. Louis County to be identified and addressed. effective solutions to be presented, and we'd just like to ask, please help us improve the health of our communities.
Thank you, Mayor. Any questions of either one of these witnesses? You have one more, Senator Bach?
I believe so, Mr. Chairman. Yes.
Welcome. Just state your name.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Chris Francis. I'm the president and CEO of the Duluth YMCA. Now, the Duluth YMCA is excited about the prospect of a regional health and wellness center for the citizens of southern St. Louis County and is honored to be a part in its development. For over 160 years, the YMCA has been one of the nation's leading nonprofits, strengthening communities through youth development, healthy living, and social responsibility. The YMCA is poised to face the challenges in the communities we serve by providing wellness programs that appeal to all ages and levels of fitness, spearheading initiatives that focus on obesity, diabetes prevention, and the needs of older adults. By supporting community leaders and building healthier environments for individuals and families in the places they live, work, learn, and play. To live by our commitment to the whole community, these services are provided to everyone regardless of their ability to pay. The Y has the long-standing relationships and community presence not just to promise but to deliver lasting personal and social change. The YMCA also has many examples of collaborative relationships and shared services agreements with a large variety of institutions. For these reasons, the Duluth Area Family YMCA was approached as a partner in the Arrowhead Regional Health and Wellness Center project. The Y has a track record as a collaborator, could bring together partners from every sector to make our communities healthier. Our organization is committed to building a stronger Northland, and this center will allow the Y to address the needs of a broader community. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments of the members here? Am I the only one that's got this map, or does everybody have this map?
No.
Well, according to their catchment area here, it looks like my district might even be involved in this. I'm not sure, but it's possible. So.
Chairman, Friedenberg Township is in your
yes,
district.
Yes, I know that. I know Friedenberg Township is in
and just, district. If I may, Mr. Chair, just a comment. The
Did he vote for me is a question.
I've served 30 years in public service, four mayors of Duluth. I stay out of the politics.
I hope you voted. Westrom.
Mr. Chair, you talk about the YMCA. How far would this facility be from the current one in Duluth?
It would be about 10 miles away from the downtown facility. Is that correct, Mayor? 10 miles, yes, sir.
Yeah. You have to go up the hill in the wintertime, so you might not be able to get there. Yeah, you need a new one anyway. Okay, Senator Bach, any final comments?
Mr. Chairman, it's those of us that are rural members always read and hear about the tension between townships and cities and annexation issues and different intergovernmental problems, and it's kind of exciting to find a project where the city and all of the surrounding townships have passed resolutions of support and they're willing to work together to build a regional facility. So it's been a pleasure to be a part of.
Okay.
And we do, Mr. Chairman, if we can get the planning and pre-design money, we'll come forward with a bonding proposal likely 2 years from now, and we would expect to enter into a local fundraising effort to raise or somehow pay for half of the construction costs.
Okay. All right. With that, then, we'll lay over Senate File 2339 for a recommendation to the bonding committee. So
thank you.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Sacksog, you can get back up there again now.
You're up.
Senator Sacksog, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm aware of a couple other amendments, so we'd stand for questions and amendments.
Are there any other amendments? Senator Ingebretson.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A5 amendment. Please bear with me, Mr. Chair. I got this horrible cold going on.
Don't shake hands with people. Okay, go ahead, Senator Ingebretts. Why don't you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, and thank you, Senator Sacksog. We did have some discussions with regards to this This basically gets right to the point of eminent domain and acquisitions of legacy funding for eminent domain. This was brought to me by another member in my caucus, and with some concerns that he had overheard some projects were actually going to be built, and the funding for legacy was mentioned in this article, and along in that article was the not so popular term of eminent domain. Now, eminent domain is used for obvious reasons. I mean, we have to have roads, we have to have infrastructure, we have to have things to get by in our daily lives and get commerce to and from, and I don't think that was ever the intention of the legacy funding. And this is, I don't know that anybody's ever talked about this, Mr. Chair and members. But it came to my attention about 2 weeks ago, and after talking to some of the folks that have been around this and worked very hard on this legacy funding, they were quite open to it, quite open to the idea of putting it in law that you aren't able to use eminent domain when you do these types of projects, whether they be restoration, fee title of projects. Also, knowing that clean water money, of course, is part of the clean water legacy funding. There you would have some issues, and maybe Mr. Knopf can help us with that. But if you had to have a water facility, a treatment facility, and some of the dollars through legacy would be to be utilized for that, we would not want to step in the way of that. But I think we need to send a message to folks that we are talking about, when we do acquisitions, we talk about willing sellers. We always have. And so the amendment, Mr. Knopf, or Mr. Chair, if Mr. Knopf could go through it and make sure that it's very clear to everybody what it's about, but it does talk about basically the acquisitions not being able to use eminent domain.
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chair, the first section of the amendment, which is quoted as Section 3, deals with the Parks and Trails Fund. And you see identical language in all three places. Parks and Trails Fund, the language is on 2.4 to 2.6, basically saying it cannot be used, not spent on acquiring property by eminent domain or to acquire property that's previously been acquired by eminent domain. Section 4 deals with the Outdoor Heritage Fund, it's the same language as there for the Outdoor Heritage Fund. Section 5 deals with the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and the same language you'll see on page 3 for the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
And have we done this with? Have we used any of this money for eminent domain?
Mr. Chair, not that I'm aware of. I don't know if any of, as Senator Ingebrigtsen talked about with the Clean Water Fund, whether or not there have been wastewater treatment facilities or other facilities where they've used it. But as far as I know, this is it's not been used certainly directly that I'm aware of.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to fix something that isn't broke, but we all hear about this. We all hear about the acquisition, and I think we sometimes get criticized for doing that with these dollars. And frankly, that was the intent of those that voted for this, not to buy all the land. Don't get me wrong, but there is some acquisition that does go on, and the folks are very concerned about it, I think this will send a strong message to them that if, in fact, we do participate in these types of acquisitions, that it will be a willing seller, and we are not going to go out with the heavy hand of government and use eminent domain. I don't think that's the intent at all of the folks, and I would ask your support of this amendment.
Senator Saxon, do you want to comment on this?
Well, and I may have some comments here, too, but I don't know that I disagree with the amendment, except for the fact that we're only the Lessard Sams here, so I think that probably the other two, the arts and the parks and trails, probably ought to be added to another bill maybe next year.
Yeah.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I was just going to ask Senator Ingebrigtsen the purpose or the meaning of also not acquiring property that has previously been acquired by eminent domain. if there is property that has been acquired by some other public entity and it would be and it'd been acquired through that mechanism, it was going to be wrapped into one of these conservation or preservation projects that would be unavailable for that purpose.
Senator, did I hear that correctly?
No, I think that's a good point, Senator DeBoer. And I would, I'm just trying to think on the fly here as to the acquisitions that have gone on and some of the properties that may have been purchased under the eminent domain law some years ago now that with the urban sprawl that goes on, for instance, that might come into play, I suppose. I don't know, Mr. Knopf, if that could be fixed somehow here. Or, well, you know what the intent, I think, of the...
Mr. Chair, the reason that it's stated that way, that previously been acquired by eminent domain, is because, and I can't give you a chapter and verse of practices in the past, but it's my understanding that there have been some state trails where the state doesn't have eminent domain authority, and the local government uses eminent domain to take the land for the trail and then just sells it to the state after they've used their eminent domain authority. That was to make sure you couldn't have any of these, what I would call kind of a straw man, a straw person conveyance of land where one entity would do it by eminent domain and then you would buy it from them. But again, Senator Dibble points out there could be some issues with that too.
Mm-hmm. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you. And to Senator Saxhog's point, I'd be fine with that. We're working, as we all have been, a work in progress with Legacy. Just targeting the Lessard today and talk about that with the water folks, with the Clean Water and Parks and Trails. I know we can do this. I mean, we have the authority to do it, but I don't want to talk about a heavy-handed bill and then be heavy-handed at the same time. I mean, I'd like to have some input from them, but if we could just target the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage portion of the legacy funding today, that's something that I guess...
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, you're modifying your amendment, so you're only moving the contents of lines 2.7 to 2.15.
That would be acceptable to the author. That's what I would like to do.
Well, so Mr. Chair, we got a couple comments
Mr. Hartwell.
From my testifiers. And then.
Okay. Mr. Hartwell.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. I just want to be clear that the council has not, to my knowledge, been involved in any eminent domain projects. I do know that we have had a discussion about the DNR's ability to use eminent domain for a aquatic invasive species barrier related to Asian carp, where you can put a barrier on a river coming from Iowa to keep carp out of Minnesota, but in flood stage, you need a dike 2 or 3 feet high across the neighboring field, or the carp can get around the barrier. To my knowledge, that's the only discussion of eminent domain that's ever been talked about by the council. I don't think this is a big problem for us, but that flexibility might be something you want to think about in terms of special circumstance versus creating a new unit or doing something else that is really what I think Senator Ingebrigtsen is talking about, not going in and creating some thing from unwilling sellers to create a marsh or something else.
Senator Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was going to speak in favor of it. I think this is a good provision, a good government provision, frankly. If we've never used it, it sounds to me like it's just a strong protection. So I guess at this point I'd speak in favor of the modified amendment and urge member support.
So, Mr. Knopf, give me the verbiage here. We're just modifying the A5 amendment to have Section 4 applicable.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it would be basically deleting Section or page 1, lines 2 through 34, and then delete lines 2.1 to 2.6, and then delete everything after line 2.15, and then all of page 3.
Okay. Does everybody understand that? Senator Dibble.
Thank you. We don't need to vote on the amendment to the amendment.
No.
Okay, great. I just wanted to just raise the question for the committee. I understand Senator Ingebrigtsen's intent and and appreciate it. I think the most recent discussion we had in the legislature, you know, after that Supreme Court decision around eminent domain was in those instances where eminent domain was used to acquire property for the purpose of then turning that property over to private interests for development, and public entities' ability to do that was fairly severely curtailed, kind of caught like wildfire and went around all the states in the country. And so when economic development authorities are undertaking those sorts of activities, their ability to do that is pretty hampered. This is a somewhat different matter, and that's, you know, acquiring property for public purpose. Sounds like it hasn't happened for these conservation purposes. But there's a flip side to the coin, which is sellers who, you know, government comes around, expresses an interest in conserving property that's in private hands, and all of a sudden the dollar signs appear in their eyes, and costs get driven up rather dramatically, and you know, a hard bargain is driven, and then public resources aren't able to go that much further. So I wonder if, you know, placing this language in statute won't create that dynamic in that circumstance more frequently than it otherwise would or should, and the Lessard Sam's dollars just won't be able to go as far. I would kind of artificially creating a market dynamic that might.
I think, Senator Dibble, you have a valid concern, except that it sounds like eminent domain hasn't been used for these purposes. And so I think the whole idea here is to not use it with these dollars, and I think it's probably okay. That's my opinion, at least, but I understand where you're going. Senator Scalzi, okay, go ahead, finish.
Well, just to finish my thought, well, I think I you know, it's true it hasn't been used, but you know, proactively sending a signal in law might create a dynamic in the marketplace that's not intended. Mm-hmm. That would drive up costs.
We can do that. Yeah, we can always use the word notwithstanding too. Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that rather than us putting down the heavy hand of government, so to speak, at this time, I'm not sure what ramifications. We always talk about unintended consequences here. I think that we should maybe direct this to the councils themselves and ask them if they're aware of any properties that have been acquired by eminent domain. And in eminent domain is not always a bad thing. Sometimes people like eminent domain because they're offered some other options that they wouldn't get by being a willing seller. They might have relocation expenses. They might have lots of things that would be helpful to them. So eminent domain is not necessarily always a bad thing or not liked by the seller.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also, in response to Senator Dibble's comments about the driving factors of value and that type of thing, any property that's acquired under eminent domain has to be paid for on the basis of market value. And quite frankly, an appraiser typically will not use any government sale because a lot of times it's not considered necessarily an arm's-length transaction, because there may have been some type of extenuating circumstances or a forced sale or whatever the case might be. So the fact whether there's money available or not available really shouldn't go into the overall factor of market value as these properties are being acquired, because in most of these instances there's going to be the need for an appraisal to be done at some point in time anyway.
Okay. Any other comments? Does everybody understand what the modified A5 amendment is? Okay. All right, then on Senator Ingebrigtsen's modified A5 amendment, voting on just Section 4, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
The motion is adopted.
No, no.
Mr.
Chair,
yes,
I have an A4 amendment, which
Oh, wait, comes out.
And if somebody else had the A4, I don't mean to take it out of their hands, but since I'm going to agree with it.
Somebody else want the A4? Maybe. See the word grazing in here.
If it's something that will pass, I'll be more than happy to offer it.
Well, think about it. You're one out of two.
How's that?
Senator Gritson, you're one out of two. If you were a baseball player, you'd be making about $20 million a
year. That's not all bad.
Senator Saksak on the A4.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Apparently, the person who proposed this wants to do is make sure that it's pretty clear that conservation grazing under a management plan that has already been implemented may continue.
It's a drainage engineer.
And which we understand.
Okay. And does haying have anything to do with this one?
Haying and grazing, oh, yeah.
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, did you do this in response to my question, Senator Saksak, or were you already on this page?
I think Senator Scoy was on this, and he wasn't even around when you were talking.
Oh. We could add haying in, Mr. Chair. And just kidding.
Okay. Does anybody want to explain why this is what we're doing here? Or just checking off?
Well, Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that this is a clarification because the language in the bill says that they can't do emergency haying or grazing during those emergency periods. This would clarify that if you're already doing conservation grazing under a management plan, that can continue, that language doesn't stop you from doing that. In my understanding of the languages that exist in the bill, this is pretty much assumed, but some people want to have this very clear. That it can continue.
We assume this as being a clarification,
okay,
Mr. Chair.
You know what they say about assuming, don't you? Okay, so yes, Senator Westrom.
Something about you and me.
Yes.
As Mr. Knopf, the management plans, who are we filing these management plans with? Is it through Bowser, or who are we talking? Who has these management plans, and I guess I'm just interested in to what extent can cattle farmers either lease such lands, or if they own them and are farmers themselves, can they graze them, in what circumstances? And we've been trying to open up some of the state lands to more grazing opportunities for farmers, and oftentimes a young farmer, it's a good way to get more pasture land and opportunity for a cattle farm or a ranch or a, those horses or other things that might eat hay, but cattle come to mind. I know the cattlemen are very interested in having a partnership in more access to land. So can you give me just a little background about it? Because I don't think this goes near as far as I think we should go. And maybe it's all allowed and worked out, but who's handling these management plans?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, it would be the agency who's managing the land, whoever. A number of these would be under DNR, and when they own the land, I don't know if you want to get into too much. You know, I don't know if I know enough to get into too much detail.
Don't get into the grassland.
Yeah, that's right.
the weeds.
But DNR, I know the Department of Natural Resources has been working with some of their wildlife management areas and other lands. To allow some conservation grazing as long as it's to promote wildlife and the species that they're intending on promoting, and so this most of these would be Department of Natural Resources would eventually take control of these lands, and they would be management plans that would be worked out between the owner of the cattle and the Department of Natural Resources in a plan.
So, Mr. Chair, and I guess Senator Saksak, but maybe Mr. Knopf can answer. I mean, generally, would we allow that unless there's an emergency in circumstances where there's not an emergency order from the federal government?
And Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, that's what this is talking about too. It's already being implemented prior to the emergency order. There's a management plan in place. There's a plan to graze the cattle. And it says that they may continue that process.
Okay.
Ms. Coop.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, just to reiterate, as I mentioned earlier, at the time that the land comes into either the state government's responsibility or the federal government, or in some cases under private lands, there is a requirement under law that a restoration and enhancement plan must be in effect. In some of those plans, and actually in the majority of those plans in the prairie regions of the state, there are conservation plans that do include haying and grazing as acceptable conservation techniques. So what this language does is recognizes those plans are in effect and it allows the continued haying and grazing during emergency orders, but does preclude emergency haying and grazing for those lands which do not have conservation management plans that include haying and grazing. I want to point out, too, that there's one very interesting appropriation recommendation that's been in effect for a couple of years, and it can also be found in this year's bill, is the Nature Conservancy's Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project, where they have guaranteed that they will use income generated from those lands to pay property taxes, so there is no PILT liability incurred in the acquisition of those lands. And a big part of their conservation plans is the working lands concept of using the lands for haying and grazing in collaboration with a number of agricultural entities, including the Cattlemen's Association.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Koop, you keep talking about haying or grazing. This amendment, it's where I got the language for this amendment, somebody asked me to put in what the House did, and so I took it from the journal. And it only talks about grazing. It doesn't talk about haying. Do you know why they didn't include the word haying here?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Knopf, I do not remember.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for not catching your name. Isn't the effort here to try to replicate what some of the buffalo herds were doing on the prairie grasses? And if haying is part of what they need to replicate what the buffalo are doing to the prairie, we should be probably including that as a management technique as long as it's part of their overall plan?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, yes. The introduction of buffalo or cattle or goats for goats provides a disturbance to the land, which replicates the traditional buffalo roaming, you know, on the plains, if you will. But there are other disturbance techniques like fire, for example, which are also utilized as a conservation tool by the conservationists working in the state.
Well, Mr. Chair, as long as it's within their management plan, I think that we should probably include the word conservation, grazing, or haying on all of these and let them devise the plan that will best do the restoration of the prairie to what they had. And it seems reasonable, as long as the conservation plan includes it, that we should give them that flexibility.
Is that a motion?
Sure.
So, okay. Senator Sacksack, you want to include or haying after grazing?
Mr. Chair, if those plans are already in effect, I mean, that's just fine.
So Senator Sacksack will include or haying after grazing on everywhere where grazing appears in the amendment. You want to say something?
Only if I can help, Mr. Chairman.
Are you going to be helpful?
No.
Okay.
Less is more.
All right. So on the A4 amendment as upgraded by Senator Scoy and incorporated by Senator Saxhog, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion is adopted. Okay. Are there any other comments, questions, or amendments for Senate File 2098? Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question as it relates to lands that are being acquired with these funds. Of course, management of those gets turned over to the Department of Natural Resources. And is there ever any discussion between the DNR and the committee as to what additional management costs, total costs, are being incurred by the DNR as a result of these additional lands?
Mr. Chair, Senator Weber, yes, indeed. There is a requirement in statute that entities holding lands report to the council the ongoing maintenance costs associated with those lands. Those are included in documents provided to the council, and we were certainly more than happy to provide those to you as well.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I thank you. I'd like to see that because I understand that the Lasard Sam's monies do not go towards the payment of that, but I don't think that means that when we're passing the budget, obviously those funds costs have to be absorbed by the DNR budget or they have to add to their budget, and I think that it behooves us to be knowledgeable of what those additional costs are.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Weber, I would also add that some of the land is also being held by the federal government, and under some of those partnerships, the federal government is responsible for the ongoing maintenance of some of those lands if they're held by the federal government. So the state lands, you're right. Each applicant from the department or from the Board of Water and Soil Resources needs to attest to how those lands will be maintained in the future, and then report on those costs.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Not then. Senator Saxog moves that Senate File 2098 as amended be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. Thank you very much. Senator Dietzick. Senate File 1899.
Yes, sir. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the first committee with the bill, so I have a delete all amendment. It's not a delete all that I would like passed out. It might be in the packets. It's the A2 amendment.
This is an amendment that puts it in the shape you would like to have the bill in. Is that
correct? Okay. I can go over it. It's there's typos. There's clarifications. And then on the second page is extensions that these are not additional money or new money. It's just extending the time frame to these are previously approved projects.
Okay. On the A2 amendment to put the bill in the shape the author would like it, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 1899 is the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. It's the recommendations for projects to be funded from the Environmental and Natural Resource Trust Fund beginning July 1, 2014. The trust fund was established in 1988 when voters approved a constitutional amendment. The dedicated fund is a combination of Minnesota State Lottery proceeds and investment income and is to provide a stable source of funding for the activities that protect, preserve, and enhance Minnesota's environment and natural resources. Joining me this past year on the LCCMR was Senator Tomasoni, Senator Hoffman, Senator Dames, and Senator Westrum. The LCCMR received 192 proposals in its request for proposal process, totaling approximately $111 million. We heard 94 presentations on a wide variety of issues and projects, from sewage to bugs to water to trails to Maxine the Bald Eagle. We are recommending 71 proposals. They will collectively receive approximately $29 million in funding from the Environmental and Natural Resource Trust Fund. 47 of these projects are statewide projects, or about 65% of funding. These provide best management practices or have statewide implications. I'm tired. About $2.6 million is proposed for several pollinator projects. The Minnesota Department of Agriculture estimates that pollination supports an estimated $15 billion worth of agricultural production, including more than 130 fruits and vegetables. There is a handout that they'll be passing out that shows a picture from, I believe it's Whole Foods, actually. It's a grocery store produce section, and it shows what it would look like if we didn't have pollinators. These projects are from a variety of sources. The DNR will be assessing the current status and distribution of wild bees in prairie grassland habitats. The zoo will be working to prevent the extinction of the prairie butterfly. The U will look at enhancing and coordinating pollinator habitat and research the impact of exposure to systemic insecticide on bees. The Landscape Arboretum will prepare a pollinator education exhibit, and Pheasants Forever hopes to involve 800 youth and 200 adults in 40 communities across the state to improve local landscapes for pollinators. We also are proposing two moose studies to address the declining health and look at the effects of temperature and forest quality on moose health. You should have two handouts in your packet, and they summarize the project recommendations. We are proposing around $4.5 million, or about 16%, for water resource projects. Most of these are statewide projects studying impacts of contaminants on water quality. They're studying groundwater, aquifers, and lakes. We are proposing about $2.3 million for AIS, aquatic invasive species, and I'm calling it TIS, terrestrial invasive species. It's about 8%. One of the projects, the U of M Aquatic Invasive Center, Species Center, which we have funded last year. They have a proposal to modify operations at Lock and Dam number 2, which is north of Hastings, and number 8, which is near Genoa, Wisconsin, 2 through 8, to impede invasive carp movement on the Mississippi, the Minnesota, and the St. Croix rivers. And they recently discovered carp larvae just south of dam number 8. We are also proposing a regional AIS prevention pilot project in northwestern Minnesota in a watershed area. And this will hopefully provide some best management practices to share with other watersheds. We have several bugs here that we can pass out that we are looking at, from the stink bug to the invasive EAB, emerald ash borer, to mountain pine beetle. So we have bugs if people want to look at them. We have all sorts of fun things. Terrestrial invasive species is a big issue. We heard a bill from Senator Saxog earlier that is looking at creating a terrestrial invasive center. These bugs are a potential threat to our forest and agriculture. The U of M and the Department of Ag will assess the risk posed to our estimated 191 million pine trees if the mountain pine beetle arrives, and they'll prepare an early detection and rapid response plan. The brown marmorated stink bug is a threat to agriculture and horticulture. The U and the Department of Ag will evaluate biological control options and implementation in Minnesota. We are also proposing approximately $4.2 million or 14.5% on foundation, natural resource data, and information projects. These include the final phase of the Minnesota Breeding Bird Atlas and a project restoring old forest inventory data. We are proposing about $3.7 million or 13% to protect, restore, and enhance land, water, and habitat, including several of the pollinator projects, a cattail management and bioenergy potential project, and a watershed protection plan to provide template for stewardship of unimpaired waters in southeast Minnesota. Almost $7 million or 24% will go towards land acquisition for habitat and recreation, including the Mesabi Trail, a trail in Morton, SNA, Scientific Natural Research Acquisition and Restoration, and property along the St. Croix near Stillwater. $3.4 million, or about 12%, will go for air quality, climate change, and renewable energy projects, including some projects involving the U of M in Morris, U of M Waseca, a beet processing and wastewater and manure project, and septic tank system research projects. That was a really fun day. $3.7 million, or 13%, for environmental education, including youth and sustainability.
And you don't want to elaborate on that?
No. they talked about the systems overflowing. Nope.
Mr. Chair, thanks. I just had my lunch.
I was aware of that.
I know.
$3.7 million, or 13%, is for environmental education, including youth-led sustainability initiatives in 40 greater Minnesota communities and projects to diversify and reach out to minority communities to get them involved in the outdoors and the natural resource community. And less than 1%, or about $244,000, for administration, website, and contract management. 18 of the projects are for non-metro regional projects, including the trail on the Iron Range and the Minnesota River Water Trail in Morton, and the U of M Morris research, which includes transitioning farms to local energy. We have six projects that are mostly in the greater 11-county metro area. In addition to the 71 proposals, we are recommending and are requesting time extensions for approximately 11 proposals originally funded in 2010, 2011, and in 2013. As I mentioned earlier, these projects are not requesting or receiving additional funds. They just need additional time for completion, and mostly that's because our field season, the funding starts in July, and our field season is actually June through, you know, August, September. So by the time they get the money, half of the field season is already over. So they just need another extension. Also in the bill, the LCCMR is scheduled to sunset in 2016, and so we are requesting to repeal that language since appropriations and member appointments go beyond 2016. With this bill, we have an opportunity to fund some interesting proposals that provide research and data to improve and protect our quality of life in Minnesota. I'd like to thank Ms. Susan Thornton, Executive Director of the LCCMR, who is sitting here with me, and Mike Banker, Michael McDonough, and Diana Griffiths, who are the LCCMR staff, and they do a fabulous job reviewing and preparing all the materials for our meeting and this hearing. So, Mr. Chair, with that, we can quickly go over all 71 projects if you want, we can stand for questions. It's whatever you wish.
We've got 40 minutes. So do you guys want to go over all 71 projects?
5 minutes apiece.
5 minutes each. Just the juicy ones. If the committee's okay with not going over the projects, then I'm okay with not doing that also. Senator,
I have to ask one.
Ask a question.
I have to ask one.
Ask a question, absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, the 051 subdivision, we're going to talk about moose declining, the moose population.
Yes.
What were some of the discussions, and maybe Ms. Thornton can help us with that, but it's been studies have been going on and on and on for years now, and we're declining in numbers. Can you give us a little idea what, I don't know if Mr. Forster's here or not, or Jessica, to talk about that, but.
Mr. Chair and Senator Mixon, we funded a study last year that is still ongoing, and then we have these two projects, and one of them is, again, looking at the temperature, and then one of them is looking at the, so they're seeing if the temperature impacts the female health, and then also if the state of the forest and if the forest quality is impacting any health. And from the discussions, and I am not a moose expert, but one of the LCCMR committee members is a Swedish and moose expert, and he believed that these projects are important. And I can ask Ms. Thornton to expand a little more.
Ms. Thornton, and you can add any other comments you'd like to add also.
Mr. Chair, members, Susan Thornton with the LCCMR staff. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and Senator Ingebrigtsen. Yes, these have been some ongoing studies. I just want to reassure people, their members, that the two proposals in front of you are being coordinated with past research that has been done and expanding it, and they're also all of the collars that have been used in the past studies will continue to be used and those moose observed within these appropriations. And we did not ask Dr. Forrester to attend the hearing today. But his, as Senator Dietzick said, is related to the diet, the body condition, the forest age, structure, and composition. Is that having an impact? What can we do to manage the forest if it is so that in favor of the moose? And then the declining air temperatures, impact of air temperatures is another one with DNR and with the University of Minnesota. And that will also continue to look at calf production and also the dying off of the adults. So they're different but yet continuums of pieces within those.
And Mr. Chair, we did have a big discussion because there was a lot of discussion, and Senator Westrum might remember this too. There was some discussion on if we should wait until some of the previous moose studies come in, but we were persuaded that these do go hand in hand, and that there were a lot of people that were concerned that we couldn't wait any longer, and that they're using some of the stuff that they already learned in the past studies, in the ongoing study, and incorporating in this and then expanding it on these two additional studies.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, just in general, not a whole lot of results yet from the dollars that have been spent, other than we're just ongoing, and hopefully we're going to come up with some resolve here in the near future, or has there been, just in general?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen, yes, they have some preliminary results that they're looking at. These are stemming, these new proposals, these new appropriations are sort of coming out of some of the findings that previous studies have been finding. But it's also kind of that, my understanding is it's that perfect storm a little bit, with related to the air temperatures, with what's going on with our forests, and then what's going on with ticks, and just, you know, other impacts on the moose. These are some of the same questions we were all asking as we were going through, and I had to ask them again when I was trying to sort out the matrix also of the various funding to ensure that there was not duplication.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
So on 06I, cattail management for wetland wildlife. Yeah. And biome. Send my cattails to Crookston.
Are you going to send your cattails to Crookston?
And my Loring Park.
He's going to bully his cattails to Crookston.
Yes. You can burn them up in Crookston and create some energy out there.
I'm going to have you carry some of my environmental stuff.
Yeah. I'm just trying to get a kind of more.
Going by there.
Well, with Senator Osmek going to get some good marks from the Sierra Club, and I'm going to get some nicks from the Sierra Club. We're balancing each other out.
We got an office for you if you want to come over.
As you all know, there's five senators and five representatives on this, and there's also seven citizens, and so we have three co-chairs. I was one of them, and Representative McGinnis is another one. Nancy Gibson is here. She's the citizen co-chair. I don't know if you want to make any comments or not, Nancy, but you're welcome to come to the table if you'd like to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Would just like to add, it was a long, hard summer. We really looked and reviewed on all these projects, and I'm pretty proud of our package, so I'm hoping you will endorse them as well. Thank you.
I actually moved one of Nancy's projects, so you can see how we cooperated. If
and I appreciate it, Mr. Yeah, Chair.
You're welcome. So, all right, any further questions or comments for Senator Dietzick or any of the witnesses?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. We did spend a lot of time reviewing these projects and actually touring portions of the state, looking at past projects and how they all work together. And so I think, as Nancy and Senator Tomasoni said, I think we have a good package here, and we would appreciate your support.
Okay. Then Senator Dietzick moves Senate File 1899 as amended. Anybody else want to comment or any questions from anybody in the audience? Okay. Seeing nothing, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. Thank you very much, Senator Dietzick.
Thank you.
And what do we have coming up?
Mr. Chair, Senators, on Monday we have Game and Fish Bill and the number of bonding bills. Bonding bills.
So you did it?
Do we have a number of hearings left, or don't we have too many, or how many here? Because there's a pot going around here, and I'm trying to make this pot as big as possible. So we don't know how many we have to have yet, right?
So we're continuing to
meeting adjourned.